Grand Slam for Masters!
It's time for Blessed to Play on EWTN Radio, uncovering the role that faith plays in the lives of sports professionals from around the country. And now, here's your host, Ron Meyer.
Fire, score!
My guest today is Todd Botto. He's a professor of athletic training and sports medicine at Quinnipiac University in Hamden, Connecticut. We're going to talk to Todd about his extensive career as an athletic trainer, also involved in sports medicine as well, and of course in higher education. We'll just talk about his experience doing that, working with athletes, and kind of like a healing profession, but we'll also talk about his faith journey in the second half of the show. I'd like to welcome Todd Botto to Blessed to Play. Todd, great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Ron. Great to be with you.
So you're like the unsung heroes of, I would say, just sports in general, whatever level that is, because athletes do get injured and they do need a trainer to kind of get them back on track. But just talk about how you got started in athletic training and sports medicine and what gave you the desire to do so.
Sure. I started out in athletic training because I had a severe accident. I fell 27 feet in the concrete. Mm-hmm. I broke six bones. I was in a wheelchair for a little while. I herniated two cervical discs. And while I was rehabbing at Southern Connecticut State University, the athletic trainers over there were kind enough to help me out. And they rehabbed me. I didn't know the profession existed until then. And then I switched my major the following semester. And then it's been a whirlwind ever since.
Now, you did your undergrad, I should say graduate school at the University of Southern Mississippi. And you got some experience there, position of a rehabilitation coordinator and a head basketball athletic trainer and assistant football athletic trainer. So you're really working with the athletes. Talk about how important that position is in collegiate sports, especially at the D1 level.
It's tremendously important. We're the first line of defense when somebody gets injured. We're the first ones on the field to deal with them, and then we see them day to day. You get to know the athletes really, really well. The hours are really, really long. You're going at 6:30 in the morning till 7 o'clock at night, rehabbing the guys, two, three times a day. But you're there, for all their needs. A lot of times I might get calls in the middle of the night because something happened where they fell down the stairs or whatever it may end up being, and go in and take care of them. So we were kind of the first line of defense. We got to know them very, very well. And you worked with them on a day-to-day basis. And so we didn't just deal with them on the physical injuries, sometimes the psychological injuries, where they might have some anxiety or depression mm-hmm. that's going on. There's a lot of pressure in upper-level sports. So we're there for all those sort of things to kind of help be the first line of defense, then funnel them out to the people that they need to be with.
Yeah, that holistic approach is very important. And there's been so much advancement in those fields over the course of the these years. I'm sure when you first came into the profession to where it is now, there's more tools at your disposal. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I started almost 35 years ago, so it's been I've seen a lot of progress in the area, the surgeries especially. Things that we years ago were kind of unthinkable coming back from are now really routine, like ACL surgeries and shoulder reconstructions, where when somebody would have a labral tear, they'd kind of be done. Now they can kind of rehabilitate and come back. So the injury still can, sideline somebody for their career, but the advances in the medical area, especially with the surgical aspects of it and some of the rehabilitation techniques have really kind of advanced themselves and made it possible for athletes to kind of strive at a much higher level and do things that they never could have done before.
Talk about your position as an athletic trainer, even involved more broader in sports medicine. How involved are you with the head coach and the staff on a daily basis?
Yeah, we meet with the staff and the head coaches on a regular basis, sometimes two or three times a day, depending on the athletes that are injured and things that are kind of going on day to day. Not all athletes, when they get injured, sit out. Sometimes they're limited in practices and they make wear a special color jersey to let everybody else know that they're on the injured list and that they're coming back from an ankle sprain and to be a little careful around them. But we kind of tailor the practices based on the person's injury. If they need to sit out, we don't put anybody at risk. But then if we can have them do some things, we'll have them step into practice and we'll talk to the coach about what they can do and what they can't do. And the coaches are pretty receptive to it. You try to build a relationship with that coach really early on and a trust with that individual. And most of the time they let you do your job and they're very receptive to what you're telling them.
Blessed to Play, Ron Meyer, chatting today with Todd Botto. He's a professor of athletic training and sports medicine at Quinnipiac University. And Todd, over 30 plus years, you just mentioned, in professional service and providing medical coverage to an estimated, I think, 7,500 athletic events. That's a lot of athletic events. When I talk with an athlete, I always say, is there a special game, a special year, a special moment that would define your career? How about in your life doing all these events? Does anything really stick out as an all-encompassing moment for you?
I've had so many. It's been incredible. Tremendous amount of people that I've worked with in professional baseball or football. I've always been in awe of what the athletes can do, how big and fast they are, especially the Division I football players. I remember the first day I walked on the field with a practice at the University of Southern Mississippi and just how big and fast those guys were. You see it on TV, but you really can't put it into words till you're right up next to them and you're standing next to them. I'm a pretty small guy. I'm about 5'8", and you know, you're standing against these guys that are 6'2", 300, mm-hmm. you know, something pounds, and they're just so big and so fast and so strong. It really was interesting. But, you know, the human side of it as well. At Southern Miss was really, really fascinating. Was Mississippi had a really big culture of faith, and that's kind of where my faith journey started. And that's one of the things that sticks out to me. That when I went down to Mississippi, it was something I never thought of doing. It was, you know, completely different than from Connecticut, where I'm from. And I went down there for a year, but I stayed for longer. And just that whole aspect of just people living out their faith down there. They're Baptist down there, and I'm Catholic. Mm-hmm. But it started me on my journey asking more questions about my faith, and that really kind of sticks out to me to this day, how nice they were and how open they were listening to my journey as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that journey definitely in the second half of the show. Now that you're involved in higher education and you're forming future athletic trainers, I think you would probably try to reach a student over and beyond just the education part of it, but there's got to be a philosophy behind what you do as well.
Yeah, when you're dealing with the students, you're recognizing that they're going to be going out and being an extension of what you taught them. So mm-hmm. so your education is going to actually impact people that you may not have ever met before, as far as from the treating perspective. So the better you can prepare a student to go out there, the better care everybody's going to get in the end. What's interesting about athletic training is, as an undergrad, now it's moved to a grad program, but as an undergrad, we used to spend a lot of time with the kids in the clinical setting. You get to know them very, very well on an intimate level, and you can kind of help them shape their aspirations. So a lot of our students have gone and worked in all different areas. We've had people working in special forces, Division I football, professional football, baseball, soccer. They're all over the place in their aspirations, but you get to know them at an intimate level on what they want to do and how they want to impact other people's lives. And you're able to tailor your conversations with them and your education towards those.
Yeah. And what would you say makes a good athletic trainer? What is the core makeup of a person that could excel in that field?
Well, you have to be compassionate. You have to recognize, you have to care about people is one thing. That's why most people go into it, because they really care about other individuals. Most people have a story behind why they go into athletic training. They've been injured some way, or they played sports, mm-hmm. or athletic trainer treated them in the past. And so they got to know that individual and said, hey, here's a way I want to kind of help take care of other individuals. Obviously, you have to have, the academics are very, very rigorous. Here at Quinnipiac, when we had our program, we'd bring in about 60 students and about 20 would graduate. It was a very, very rigorous program to get through. They spend about 1,000 to 1,500 clinical hours. And so there's a lot of time on the clinical side, honing their craft and getting there, but they have to be very, very self-motivated, very, very organized, some discipline, obviously intelligent, and they have to really, really care about the individual that's in front of them.
Let's to play Ron Meyer chatting today with Todd Botto. He's a professor of athletic training and sports medicine at Quinnipiac University. Now, when you're dealing with athletes, this is a very vulnerable moment. They're humbled when they have an injury, and a lot of times it could curtail them for a game, and sometimes even a season, and sometimes it could be a career-ending injury. So you come in a very vulnerable part of their life, and I'm sure you're able to talk to them and you know, provide some inspiration or some guidance in those situations.
It doesn't really matter what level you're dealing with. It seems to all be the same psychologically. You know, when they first get hurt, they go through the 5 stages of loss where they can't believe they're hurt, then they're bargaining, and then they get upset and they get frustrated. And just like a high school kid whose career might be coming to an end because he injured, you know, he tore his ACL in his senior year, is the same as a you know, college athlete, a professional athlete, where they're facing, you know, taking out the money aspect of it. But they all act the same, and they're all kind of heartbroken when it happens. And so the psychological component that comes with taking care of those athletes, and I usually try to set that up pretty pretty intimately early on. Matthew Kelly, who's a famous Catholic author, wrote The Seven Laws of Intimacy, and talks about, you know, becoming more intimate with an individual, getting to know that person. And he talks about on a deeper level. And so usually when I talk to an individual, when I first meet them, if I'm taping ankle for the first time, I'll ask them what their name is, you know, what grade they're in, those sort of things. But then I'll ask them, you know, their aspirations. And Matthew always said, if you ask me about their hopes and dreams, you start to connect with them at a deeper level. And that's usually what I do, is I'll ask them about their hopes and dreams. Like, what do you want to do after high school? Where do you want to go? Or what do you want to do after college? And I get to know them a little bit deeper level on what they want to do. And that opens them up to be a little bit more vulnerable when they start to have something else that they're a little bit more nervous talking to you about. So some of those more inner feelings that they're having, their vulnerabilities, false feelings, failures, things like that, they'll open up a little bit easier to you. So I find it very easy to connect with the individuals if I talk to them on a, you know, personal level, and I really show that I care about them, which I really do.
Yeah, that's an important point, because essentially you're dealing with D1 athletes who are pretty much kids, right? They're just coming out of being a teenager, in a lot of cases still are, and they're looking for guidance. Do you find that there's more pressure put on the D1 athlete now? I mean, we have nil money coming into D1 athletics, and there's a they have agents and all this stuff, and it's hitting them at a very young age. Do you see a correlation there with the stress level or just the anxiety, as you mentioned, of the modern day Division I athlete?
Yeah, I think the anxiety level across the board is up with all these kids, because even at the younger levels, they're playing year round now in one sport. And now with the NIL and the transfer portal, that changes a lot of things. The anxiety level, the stress level is definitely there for these kids. And sometimes it's really hard for them to kind of deal with.
All right, we're going to step aside and continue our discussion with Todd Botto, professor of athletic training and sports medicine at Quinnipiac University, when Blessed to Play returns after this.
To the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen.
Welcome back to Blessed to Play. Ron Meyer, joined today by Todd Botto. He's a professor of athletic training and sports medicine at Quinnipiac University, right there in Hamden, Connecticut. And Todd has been going at it for a long time, over 30-plus years of professional service, providing medical coverage. He did this roughly at 7,500 athletic events, and he's now in the classroom, but has a wealth of experience in the strength training and sports medicine, or athletic training, I should say, in sports medicine field. But we're going to talk about his faith life right now. He was born and raised Catholic, went through the Catholic schooling, if you will, then had was reinvigorated, let's put it that way, to his faith once again, and began attending daily mass and sitting in front of the tabernacle at St. Thomas Church in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I think there's a NFL quarterback who played for the Packers who might be familiar with that town or city. But this was important to you, with your time in Mississippi and getting you back in relationship with God.
Yeah, Mississippi was definitely a turning point in my life. I loved being there dearly. Had tremendous friends down there. My faith journey started. I went to Conyers, Georgia, and saw a statue of the Blessed Mother weep at a reported apparition site that was there in the 90s. And driving home from that site, it's about almost a 5 and 6 hour drive. I didn't talk with the two people that I was with, my best friend and my girlfriend at the time. And about halfway home, my best friend asked me, you know, what I thought. And I said, I was quitting my job in the morning. And the reason I came to that resolution was I had my faith, but my faith was very similar. Matthew Kelly described it after it all happened. I met Matthew a few years later and described it in one of his talks where, if we say a prayer, you know, we think we're taking a step towards God. We say two prayers, we're taking two steps. And if we do something bad, we take a step backwards. Mm-hmm. And my faith with God was very extrinsic. It was that way. I would say my prayers or go to mass or whatever, but there was no deep meaning there. And I remember when that happened, I knew I had to kind of change things because I was working so much. I was working 80 to 100 hours a week and working on a PhD. at the same time, and just didn't have time for anything else besides my career. And so at that time, I took some time off and I started my faith journey. I started sitting in front of a tabernacle, and I realized then that I didn't even know how to pray. You know, I was saying words, but they didn't mean anything. They were just words. And so my first prayers were, you know, God, help me learn how to pray. You know, I know you're there, but, you know, I want to believe you're there, but I don't feel you. You know, it was kind of like Santa Claus is to a little kid. You want to believe that that person's there, but you're not really sure. And that's kind of how it was. It's almost embarrassing to say it, but that's how I kind of felt. Like, I knew God was around, but I just couldn't feel him. I just never really had him a part of my life. And I remember I would actually, you know, feel emotional and actually brought to tears when I was in front of a tabernacle. I never felt anything like it. And I would pray that way for you know, hours every day. And I'd go and visit. Church was open, which I was very lucky. And slowly that happened. And then as that happened, I ended up coming across the monastery, and I started visiting that monastery, and the monks started to help me learn more about my faith and understand. And I started learning how to pray from the heart. People always said, pray from the heart, but I never knew how to do that. I never knew what to really say. I only knew the prayers that we learned in church, and I didn't really have any connection with God. And since then, I find myself going to church every day now. At least if I can't get the mass, I go in and visit. We have some Bless the Sacraments open 24 hours a day where you can go do adoration. And so I go there and I'll just sit and pray, and I'm able to kind of connect with God at a deeper level now as a result of that.
Blessed to Play, Ron Meyer chatting with Todd Botto, Professor of Athletic Training and Sports Medicine at Quinnipiac College. Now, you talk about this learning how to pray, essentially, or being comfortable with prayer and approaching God. But you spent 5 weeks in the monastery. That's some serious time to learn how to pray, living in this cloister contemplative environment. Talk about just being in that environment for 5 weeks and what it did for you.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I started out going there on weekends, every month or so. I'd go for a weekend or so for a retreat. And then eventually I wasn't sure what to do with my life. I was finishing my PhD. I wasn't sure where to go. And so I ended up going, and I spent 5 weeks at the Trappist Monastery, and they don't talk. The Trappist monks don't really talk. They can talk certain parts of the day, but they have grand silence. So the majority of the time they're pretty quiet. And so I lived with them inside the cloister. I worked with them, and I got to learn a lot. And it was really interesting having conversations with them, you know. I'm a type of person that always wanted perfection. I always wanted things quickly. I didn't have any patience. You know, that's one of the things that drives you, you know, to kind of be successful career-wise, right? And I had to learn to slow down a little bit and take things at God's time. The silence was actually deafening. It was so quiet. It was the only word I could use to describe was deafening. Mm-hmm. But it was the most fruitful because it was where I really learned how to be with God. And I would spend time in the church or in front of the tabernacle praying, and I never felt a peace like that. The only time I ever felt peace like that again was in Medjugorje. It was the only place I really ever felt that tremendous, tremendous, unbelievable peace. And I would love to go, and the evening prayer was my favorite. When you prayed Compline in the dark, with just one, you know, a couple candles lit on the altar. And it was really a powerful experience. And if you know, obviously people can't go there for 5 weeks, but I'd always say to somebody should go there for a weekend and at least experience it. It was amazing.
How did this change you as a person? Because it seems like there's this change that's going on in your soul, right? And then you're going back into teaching and all this stuff. How did this change you tangibly as a person from day to day?
It was really interesting. You know, the Brother Michael at the monastery says, when you see somebody, you see a photo and an x-ray. And so it's allowed me to see that people have struggles going on, and I may not understand those struggles. I was always somebody to kind of harbor a grudge at times or hold it personal. If somebody, you know, was upset with me, you know, I'd kind of be upset with them back or whatever. And it's allowed me to kind of be, you know, somewhat more compassionate to those individuals when I'm, you know, when I'm hurt. It doesn't take everything away. It doesn't make every situation go perfectly. You know, there are lots of problems in my life that don't go the way I would hope they go. But it allows me to kind of not hold on to the grudges I used to end up having, you know, with individuals like we all sometimes have when we're hurt with that. That was one, you know, thing that he said to me that was really good. And the other thing he said was that for myself, that was really interesting, is that, you know, we all have issues. Even the Pope on down has issues, and we're all working on those. And it's about getting through 1 hour at a time. You know, we want to get through 1 week at a time or 1 month at a time. But sometimes, you know, we have to pray to just get through 1 hour at a time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I do is, you know, when I have a tough day, I say, well, this hour is going to be over in a little bit, and we'll tack the next one next when it comes around.
Yeah, that's a great distinction because it puts life into perspective, obviously, but it gives you a reflective capacity. And I think that is so important to get you right. You know, it's not going to be perfect, right? The struggle is going to be there until we're in the grave, right? It's so to have that knowledge of how to handle and what your ultimate goal is very important. I want to talk about faith in action because this is something that when someone is transformed, they want to do something with their faith. And for you, that meant spending time in the rainforest in Costa Rica with the indigenous people. And you actually volunteered at one of Mother Teresa's homes in that same country. Talk about that experience.
Yeah, early on after I resigned from Southern Miss, I went back to school. I was trying to figure out what to do with my life. I ended up studying Spanish in Costa Rica. And the girl I was dating at the time in Southern Miss, she was from Costa Rica. And I ended up, her brother knew someone that was going up to the mountains with the indigenous people. And I ended up going up there for a weekend. It was the most humbling experience I ever had because here I had a polo t-shirt on and I was dressed nice and I'm going up there and you know, they were very, very simple people, but they were very, very at peace. And it was the first time I really kind of felt ashamed, to be quite honest with you, because here I was just coming out of athletics and all the glamour and all that. And, and they were very, very simple people. And I realized that, you know, how happy they were. So that was one experience. At the same time, a few weeks later, because I was there for about 5 weeks down in Costa Rica studying Spanish, I went and visited Mother Teresa's home for the dying that she had. And I ended up volunteering. And when I was there, one of the assignments I was given was to wash dishes. And so I was washing dishes and a little man was wheeled up to me and he was in a wheelchair and he had no arms. And he had one arm rather and no legs. They were amputated and from whatever condition he ended up having. And I remember I was washing dishes and I would hand them to him and he would dry the dish off with one hand. He'd dry it off and then flip it over and dry it off again. And then he'd stack it. And I remember just looking at him thinking, you know, I think I have all these problems that are really minor in nature, but to me they were, you know, big problems like so many of us, traffic, you know, standing in line, whatever. And here's this man with only one arm and he's finding an ability to come over and help me. And here I thought I was helping them, you know, and he went, I kind of had an ego, like I'm gonna go help Mother Teresa. And, you know, and part of it was I wanted to go help them because I wanted to learn how to love. I knew how to live on a superficial level, but I wanted to learn how to love on a deep level like she did. You know, she was helping people that most of us, you know, would have a hard time being in that environment. There was one person who said to Mother Teresa one time, Mother, I couldn't do this for $1 million. And she said, neither could I. You know, she was doing it from the heart and she wasn't doing it for anything else. And I wanted to have that deep love. I was yearning for that, if you will. And so I went in and that was really a humbling experience to be there. And God kind of showed me, you know, through that man, you know, kind of where I was and where, you know, he wants us to be. Cause that man was happy. He was full of joy. He was smiling. And he really, from a outside perspective, should have been feeling sorry for himself. I know I probably would have been laying in my bed, feeling sorry for myself, saying, what can I do? I only have one arm. I can't really do much in life. And here he was kind of helping me with my chores. And it was really, really an interesting experience. It changed the perspective on how I viewed things in life.
Yeah. And St. Teresa of Calcutta always talked about that, you know, helping the poorest of the poor and finding joy in that. And I think you tapped into some of that, you know, working with her sisters. Blessed to Play, Ron Meyer, once again, chatting with Todd Botto, professor of athletic training and sports medicine at Quinnipiac University in Hamden, Connecticut. Todd, what motivates you each and every day now? I mean, obviously your work, but it seems like you have deeper meaning for life. So when you get up in the morning and want to attack that day, what's your motivational factor for doing so?
That's a great question, Ron. There's so many things. I mean, my kids are one part of it. God gave me four kids and I you know, and the main goal of a parent, I think, is to get those kids into heaven. I think that's the one thing. You know, I heard there's only two things you can take, you know, to heaven with you. And one of them is, you know, the marriage that you do on earth. And the other thing is, you know, possibly your children, if you can get them there. And you know, and I think about that every day. Those are gifts, you know, to me from God. And so I try every day to be a better person. You know, it's one step at a time. The monastery is on my mind, you know, 24/7, the lessons I learned there. One of them is, you mentioned a little bit earlier, the reflection part of it. You know, I constantly reflect on my life and look at the things I did wrong today, what I could do better, where I may have not had patience, or may have been misunderstanding, or may not have been kind to somebody, you know, because I was thinking about myself too much, or whatever it may end up being. So I try to really focus every day, you know, one day at a time. As I get up in the morning, I say my prayers. At the end of the day, when I go sit in church at nighttime, I'm able to go to the church nearby that I'm able to visit at nighttime for a little bit before it closes. And I reflect on my life and what happened that day, and how can I be better? It's really no different than what I do in my career when I would go home and reflect on, you know, how I could, you know, improve my career, improve my skills. It's the same thing. I think it's more important, though, to be reflecting on how can we change the person. Mm-hmm. And are we living the life that God wants us to live? And what can we do to improve that? Who can we surround ourselves with? What experiences can we go and have to deepen that? And most of all, am I spending enough time with God every day? There are some days I get wrapped up again, you know, with life, and I put Him last, and I don't feel the same as when I put Him first. Yeah. And so I always try to make sure that He's first in my life with everything that I do. And then when I come in those difficult moments, I try to recognize that that's a challenge He's giving me that day. That's not just happening by accident, but God's sending me that challenge, and how am I going to deal with it and try to learn from that challenge?
Yeah, great words there. Well, Todd Botto has been our guest, doing a great job right there at Quinnipiac University, teaching future athletic trainers in the field of sports medicine, health, and sciences, and also was transformed by his faith, and Todd shared that with us right here on Blessed to Play. Todd, thanks so much for the time. Really do appreciate the work that you do, and sharing your testimony and your life of faith right here on Blessed to Play. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
Hey, Blessed to Play fans, check us out on the web at blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed2play.com. You could like us on Facebook. Hit us up on the platform X at Blessed to Play. For Todd Botto, I'm Ron Meyer. Thanks so much for joining us right here on Blessed to Play.
You've been listening to Blessed to Play with host Ron Meyer on the EWTN Global Catholic Network. If you have a question or comment about today's show, feel free to email us at info@blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed, the number 2, play.com. You can also connect with the show on the web at www.blessedtoplay.com. Again, that's blessed, the number 2, play.com. Join us again next time for Blessed to Play on the EWTN Global Catholic Network.